Hello, everybody. This is the Monday Night Pod, Tyler and Fenske. We're continuing our study out of Psalm 66, focusing on the Israelites and their exodus out of Egypt, with the emphasis beginning here in Exodus 14. The title of tonight's teaching is It's a Setup.
So we went through verse by verse tonight, which is what we want to do on the pod, starting with here in verse 1 of Exodus 14. It says, "And the Lord said to Moses, tell the Israelites to turn back and encamp near Pi-Hahiroth between Migdol and the sea." They are to encamp by the sea, directly opposite Baal Zephon. So this is an interesting pivot here, because the Lord told Moses what was going to happen in the sequence with Pharaoh letting the Israelites go, right? So he said, you know, by my mighty hand, I'm going to compel Pharaoh to drive you out. You're going to leave Egypt with great riches. And then, you know, fulfilling the covenant I made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, enter in the promised land. Okay, so up to this point, everything has gone on exactly as was said, and now all of a sudden, here's this detour where they turn back, and now they're camping by the sea, which is literally there's nowhere to go. They're up against the sea, right? There they are stuck. Okay, so here's why now. Verse 3, Pharaoh will think the Israelites are wandering around the land in confusion, hemmed in by the desert. Okay, so the Lord is going to bring about a miracle here for the Israelites that's going to look like disaster for them, right? But it's going to be a setup where he is going to bring the Egyptians out after them. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will pursue them, but I will gain glory for myself through Pharaoh and all his army, and the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord. So the Israelites did this. So you're seeing a couple different purposes for this. He says he will gain glory for himself through Pharaoh and his army, and the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord. So to me, this made me think, this sequence made me think a lot of John chapter 11. Okay, where when you see that they tell Jesus that Lazarus is sick, it says, verse 5 of John 11, Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So it makes note of that, right? But yet when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days, which then Lazarus dies, and the Lord tells them in verse 14, it's that the disciples may believe, and then also verse 42, that the people there would also believe. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's a setup here where as the Israelites are pushed up against the sea here, and the Lord is going to draw out the army of Egypt against them, where it looks like it's impending disaster, that's going to actually, the Lord is maneuvering this so that he will gain glory for himself, and the Egyptians will know that he is the Lord. And then over to verse 5.
Yeah, and verse 5 says, when the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, Pharaoh and his officials changed their minds about them and said, what have we done? We have let the Israelites go, and we have lost their services. So if you know before this, the Israelites were slaves in Egypt, literally working for free, right? And so it makes note that Pharaoh literally said himself, let these people go, right? Because the Lord had hardened his heart so many times over. All these plagues were sent upon them. And finally, after the killing of the firstborn, he finally had enough and said, let them go. It says he came to his senses. So he realized, okay, we were getting all this free labor done. The economy is literally about to collapse. But he twists it here. You made a great point of this tonight. He says, we have let the Israelites go and have lost their services, right? Services as if they were getting paid for the work that they were doing, right? So just a warped perspective and a revisionist history of what really happened.
Yeah, it's interesting because Psalm 105:38 says Egypt was glad when they left because the dread of Israel had fallen on them, right? And if you go back just a chapter there, you know, Pharaoh says to Moses and Aaron, he summons them during the night, this is after the firstborn had been killed, and says, up, leave my people, you and the Israelites, go. Worship the Lord as you have requested. Take your flocks and herds as you have said, and go. And also bless me. Right? The Egyptians urged the people to hurry and leave the country, for otherwise they said, we will all die. That's in the prior chapter. So right here, the chapter after, what have we done? We have let the Israelites go and have lost their services. You know, you think of Ecclesiastes 5:10, right? Whoever loves money never has money enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. So the Israelites, with, you know, this dread had fallen on them. He's the one who told them, you know, get out. And now they want them back because they realize that, yeah, the money had left. So even this, you know, this sin that they had committed with enslaving the Israelites all these years and working them ruthlessly, as it notes, they wanted that, even the sin that had destroyed everything for them, right? Because of the Israelites, all these plagues had come upon the country and the killing of the firstborn, right? But they still wanted them back,
yeah,
right? Because we've lost their services, right? Because of the money thing, they just couldn't let it go, right? There's definitely a lesson in there, right? There sometimes there's, you know, sin that causes so much problems in our lives, but, you know, we still want to hold on to it because we just can't let it go, you know, even though it's causing such a problem, right? So now they're going to go after him. So he had his chariot made ready and took his army with him. He took 600 of the best chariots along with all the other chariots of Egypt with officials over all of them. The Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, so that he pursued the Israelites who were marching out boldly. We talked about this, I believe, a couple months ago on the pod, right? But if you harden your heart, God will turn it to stone, right? If you harden your heart, God will turn it to stone. The sequence here was that Pharaoh saw these miracles being worked and hardened his heart. Saw these miracles being worked, hardened his heart. This happened over and over. Remember the first few that the magicians of Egypt themselves could reproduce the same miracles. Then it's the plague of gnats, where they cannot reproduce it, and they tell Pharaoh, this is the finger of God. Then there's another plague where it's a clear distinction between the Israelites and the Egyptians. No. Another one like that. And then the next plague after, then it says, the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart.
Yeah.
So he hardened his heart over and over, that even though he's seen the hand of God in front of him and had people telling him, this is God doing this, still hardened his heart. Finally, it then got to the point that God hardened his heart, where now he is still going to be used, but not, you know, none of this is going to be, you know, worked for his good or come with a good conclusion. It's going to be that he's going to be used, but as an object lesson.
Yeah.
He's going to be used as an example, right? Don't let God use you as an example, right? Where now his heart is being turned to stone, and the Lord is going to work out everything for his own ends, even the wicked for a day of disaster. And that's what Pharaoh is being set up for now, that he is going to be used as an object lesson, right? Because he hardened his heart over and over again. Now the Lord is hardening it for him, right? So they pursue the Israelites who are marching out boldly. The Egyptians, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots, horsemen and troops, pursued the Israelites and overtook them as they camped by the sea near Pi-Hahiroth opposite Baal-Ziphon. So they're against the sea, and now here comes this army. Here comes the Egyptians as they're up against the sea with nowhere to go. Remember, God put them there. Mm-hmm. God put them there with nowhere to go. And now here comes the army of Egypt right in front of their face. And now has overtook them here in verse 9.
Yeah. And it's important to understand that when the Lord promises something in your life and the circumstances aren't lining up, it means the end isn't finished, right? He's still working everything together, right? So when he tells them, I'm going to take you into the land flowing with milk and honey, and all of a sudden they're backed up against the sea, and the best army on earth at the time, the Egyptians, are coming at them full force, that's when you need to keep your head. That's when you need to keep the faith, right? That's when you need to remember the promises of the Lord. Because it sounds great when you're not in it, but it's when you're in it, that's when you need that word, right? It says, verse 10, as Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified and cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert. All right, so they're backed up against the Red Sea. They see the Egyptians coming at them. And their response, instead of faith, instead of remembering what the Lord has done, taking into account what the Lord had just done, mm-hmm. their response is they lose perspective, the right perspective, and they're fearful.
Yeah. Yeah, Psalm 106 says that when our fathers were in Egypt, this is verse 7, they gave no thought to your miracles. They did not remember your many kindnesses, and they rebelled by the sea, the Red Sea. That's where we're at right now. So they rebelled here because they did not give thought. They gave no thought to your miracles. They did not remember your many kindnesses. So they should have, from what they just saw the Lord do in Egypt, they should not have lost faith here. If they would have considered what the Lord had done for them before, right? We've all been very guilty of that, right? Where it's like, here's the works that God has done for us in the past. And here's how God has been faithful for us in the past. But now here we are in the present filled with fear, not remembering what God has done for us. The problem, though, is their focus, right? Their focus shifted. Right, so their faith diminished because of this fear, right? But the fear was because their focus shifted. So it says the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians searching after them. Makes you think about Matthew 14 when Peter walks on the water, but it says he saw the wind. Right, you can't see the wind, right? But he's seeing the effects of the wind.
Yeah,
and then, O ye of little faith, and he starts to sink.
Yeah.
Right, because his focus shifted from the Lord in front of him walking on the water, literally walking on the problem, right? The focus shifted, and then that caused his fear, which then diminished his faith, right? So that's what tells you it's so important when it comes to faith is, you know, where's your focus, yeah. right? Are you keeping your focus on the Lord, or are you looking at the circumstances? Because if you shift your focus to the circumstances, then you're going to miss it and that your faith is going to get diminished, right? And that's why praise is so important, because it's praise that keeps your focus on the Lord.
Yeah.
Right?
And not to take anything away from it, because in a way you can make the point of, I mean, they had never experienced anything to this level, adversity at that level to that point. And oftentimes I think in our own lives, it's once we've are challenged with something that we've never been challenged with on a level we've never experienced, that's when the temptation to look up and lose focus and notice the wind, right? That's when the temptation comes, right? But if you keep your focus on God and realize that no matter what the circumstances, no matter what the obstacle, this is an easy thing in the eyes of the Lord. Nothing is too big for the Lord. If he can do this, surely he could do that.
Well, this is the point where most people buckle.
Exactly.
Right here.
Yeah.
Right. And this is why Proverbs 24:10 tells you that if you falter in times of trouble, how small is your strength?
Yeah. Yep.
Right. So at this exact point, right. And once again, it's because the focus shifted. So the solution here is praise. Right. I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise will be in my mouth continuously. My soul shall make its boast in the Lord. Let the humble hear and rejoice. Oh, magnify the Lord with me. Let's exalt his name together. If you can keep your praise versus complaining or the fear, that'll keep your focus on the Lord, and that'll keep your faith from diminishing. But it says they rebelled here by the Red Sea. The Bible tells you in 1 Samuel 15 that rebellion is like the sin of divination. Right? And divination is where you're, you know, going to the occult for answers, right? Instead of the Lord. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happens in most situations here, because if you're not going to the Lord for answers, then you are gonna look for answers anywhere else. And that's the girlfriend, that's the parents, that's maybe a friend, and it's just whatever you've kind of heard as you bumble around in the dark filled with fear, instead of keeping your focus on the Lord and praising the Lord through circumstance. But I've seen that play out in my own life, and I've seen that play out in other people's lives too, that when it is this difficult time, when it's I'm against the sea and here comes the Egyptian army here, if you can just stop and praise, that's what shifts everything. Mm-hmm. That is your demonstration of faith there, is to praise through these times, right? So they're buckling though, they're rebelling. And here we go into verse 13, Moses answered the people, do not be afraid. Stand firm and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still. So in the midst of this, their fear and them being terrified and what's going to happen and what is going on. Because remember, this is completely, they have not been told about this at all, right? All they were told was that they were going to be, that Moses came and said, you're going to be freed. God is looking down on you. He's heard your groaning. Okay, he's looking down on you with concern. He's going to fulfill the covenant that he gave to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You're going to be led out of Egypt and led to the promised land. And all of a sudden, now you're turning back, and now you're against the sea. Here comes the Egyptian army. And here's Moses, though, with this word for them.
Yeah.
And how good to have just a Moses in your life that can speak that word to you, that timely word that you need from the Spirit, right? So here's, even though the situation has not changed, even though the circumstances have not changed, here's what the Spirit says.
Yeah.
Right? Thus saith the Lord. And that's what you need, right? You need a word from the Lord. You don't need a word from the girlfriend. You don't need a word from your parents, from your friends, from anybody else. You need a word from the Lord. Now, often God will speak through, could speak through the parents, the friends, the people around you, right?
But that's seeking.
Right. You're seeking the Lord.
Yeah.
You're asking for wisdom from the Holy Spirit. And now that may, part of that may come through people around you, right? As you seek the Spirit.
Yeah.
Right, but not just, oh, my focus is shifted off God and I'm, you know, oh, here's what this one person said.
Yeah.
Right, as you go about in confusion. God is not the author of confusion.
Yeah. And that helps you keep your head, which is what gets you through, right? And then verse 15, we hear the Lord's response, right? We're going to realize that the Lord has the answers. Verse 15, it says, then the Lord said to Moses, why are you still crying out to me? Tell the Israelites to move on. Raise your staff and stretch your hand over the sea to divide the water so that the Israelites can go through the sea on dry ground, right? So the Lord expects faith out of you, and he expects you to demonstrate that faith through action, right? I think a lot of times the teaching on this or the spark notes of it, people hear about, oh, the Lord led the Israelites out of Egypt, he opened the sea for them, and then he closed it on the Egyptians, right? That fact where he tells Moses to raise his staff, that's often overlooked, right? The Lord is expecting you to take steps and take action and have demonstrations of faith throughout the test.
Yeah, faith involves action.
Yeah.
Right? It has to be exercised in order for it to be real.
Yeah.
This is why the word says you walk by faith, not by sight. If it was by sight, then the miracle would already happen and then you would take action.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Faith, good definition, acting like it's so, even when it's not so, in order that it might be so because God said so.
Again.
Acting like it's so, even when it's not so, in order that it might be so because God said so. The opposite of faith would be something that I, you know, just heard a kid say the other day where he's like, oh, I'm, you know, going into, this is exactly what he said. He said, I'm going into this season, and if it goes well, and I go Division I, then I'm going to keep playing baseball. If not, I'm going to quit. That'd be the exact opposite of faith.
Mm-hmm.
I have to see it come to pass for me on my own will and my own timeline, and now I will do it.
It's
right
out of God.
Right, faith, acting like it's so, even when it's not so, in order that it might be so because God said so. Right, so raising the staff. Okay, that makes you think of when the priests were told to put their feet into the water of the Jordan, and now the Jordan started to pile up so they could cross on dry ground. When Jesus told Martha to roll the stone away, right? And she said, to go back to what, because there's great parallels in here of the raising of Lazarus to what happened at the Red Sea in terms of faith. If you go back to John 11, take away the stone, he said. But Lord, said Martha, the sister of the dead man, by this time there's a bad odor, for he's been there 4 days. So she's going to try to debate about, you know, mortuary science with him. But Jesus said, did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God? That stone's got to go away first. Once they take away the stone, verse 41, then Jesus looked up and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. Oh, man, that's so good. Right, so this was already agreed upon. So they had already agreed that this was going to happen. Now it was the faith that had to be exercised, and now it could move. But it had already been agreed upon. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me. When he had said this, Jesus called in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." So that stone has to be rolled away first. That's your part. That is your role, is to demonstrate faith, right? You have to demonstrate faith. So Moses raises his staff, right? "Stretch out your hand over the sea to divide the water." It says, "I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they will go in after them. And I will gain glory through Pharaoh and all his army, through his chariots and his horsemen. The Egyptians will know that I am the Lord when I gain glory through Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen." So this is an interesting point here, because even though the Israelites have rebelled, it says in verse 8 of Psalm 106, "Yet he saved them for his namesake to make his mighty power known." He saved them for his namesake to make his mighty power known. So even though they're having a hard time with this, and even though they are rebelling and they're struggling with their faith, right? Luke 17:5, "Lord, increase our faith," right? Because they're in alignment with God, they're going to see this miracle come to pass, because they're in alignment. So there is a lot of people out there that they want the miracle, but they don't want God. They got their own agenda, their own will. They're doing their own thing. And they're like, "Hey, God, I need you to come along with what I'm doing." And they think that now God's there to give them blessing. It's the will of God that's going to be accomplished, is whether you're getting on board with that. So if you get alignment with God, then you're going to see things happening, yeah, right? Because the miracles of God are going to come according to his will and his timeline. It's whether you're there for that or not. So if you're a narcissist, you're going to have a lot of confusion in your life as to why this and that didn't happen when you thought it should happen according to your will and your timeline, because you think it's all about you. So Christianity is going to be pretty difficult for you, because you think it's all about you. And right there, you see it's bigger than you. Mm-hmm. God's going to gain glory through Pharaoh and all his army, and the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord. Yeah. Right? So God is orchestrating this for these reasons here. And the Israelites are going to be blessed through it, because they're in alignment. Mm. They're struggling, but they're in alignment. Yeah. Right? They're waffling. They're struggling with their faith. They're in rebellion, but they're still in alignment with the Lord. They're still walking with the Lord. Right? That's the key. Yeah. So if you're this little CIA Christian where nobody knows that you're this lukewarm Christian, kind of, you know, secretly pitter-pattering around, where you won't get in alignment with God, then don't expect anything. Because if you will not acknowledge me before men, I will not acknowledge you before my Father in heaven. Right? You got to get into alignment.
Yeah.
Right?
And I think that shows the nature of God and how great his grace is that Romans says that he will work all things together for those that love him, right? Those that are called according to his purpose, right? And so even if you don't get it 100% right, even if you do falter, even if you do hesitate, even if you do waffle, if you do love the Lord and you are in his alignment, his grace is that much greater, right? To where his will is still going to be done. He's going to bring glory to his name no matter what, because that's the bigger thing, right? Right? It's bigger than just the Israelites in this moment, right? All 2 million of them, or however many there were, right? Mm-hmm. It's bigger than just them. Mm-hmm. It's about the Lord. Right. And so hopefully that's comforting, and knowing, gosh, we want to get it right. We want to demonstrate our faith. We don't want to buckle. But that highlights the importance of being in alignment with God and loving the Lord that much more, because he knows that we're made out of dust. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he loves us that much more. And he'll still, even in our imperfections, work it together for his glory.
He does not treat us as our sins deserve.
Exactly. Yeah. So they deserve to be washed up, as we all do, but he was still glorified through that because of their love.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, that's good points. Verse 19 says, "The angel of God who had been traveling in front of Israel's army withdrew and went behind them. The pillar of cloud also moved from in front and stood behind them, coming between the armies of Egypt and Israel. Throughout the night, the cloud brought darkness to the one side and light to the other side. Big verse here. So neither went near the other all night long. Neither went near the other all night long. When you see that the kind of chaos and confusion and what's about to happen now just get distilled to peace and to calm, that's when you're going to see God move. Yeah. Now you're on the brink. Get ready, get ready, get ready. Now you're on the brink because now you're going to see God start to move.
Yeah.
Right? When that peace comes, because then you know it's the Spirit has come.
Exactly.
Right? Things are about to go now. Right? Because up to this point, it's just we're up against the sea. Here comes this army. We got no place to go. What's going to happen here? We got a word from Moses, but we still haven't seen anything come to pass yet. But now here's some calm, right? Things kind of started to slow down a little bit, right?
Yeah.
And then it says, then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, right? That faith in action. And all that night, the Lord drove the sea back with a strong east wind and turned into dry land. The waters were divided, and the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with a wall of water on their right and on their left. So if you go to Hebrews 11, it tells you by faith, the people passed through the Red Sea as on dry land by faith, right? So they were in rebellion here in verse 10 through 12, but now they're going to pass through the sea on dry ground by faith. So if you look at this, they were positioned for this miracle and God was going to bring this about. They didn't have anywhere to go.
Yes.
So you either turn around and get cut to pieces by Pharaoh's army, or you go through the sea that just opened up. So despite the rebellion, despite their waffling, God's gonna drag them right into where they need to be, right, and position them for success with this, and is gonna put them up against the sea. And here's this army so that they can see their Pharaoh and see their enemies drowned in front of their own eyes.
Yeah. Yeah.
No other option.
Yeah. It's like the Lord knew ahead of time to give them no other option, right? And I think an interesting aspect of this is that the Lord sets things up like this to where it's only a miracle because it's only Him that could get you out of it, right? A lot of times people want to experience the miracles of the Lord, but they don't realize that the way that they're going to be set up is that there's no way out except with the Lord, right? You want to see the supernatural, but you don't realize that it requires faith that the Lord can do the supernatural to get you through. And that's what the Israelites experienced here.
Yeah, it says the Egyptians pursued them and all Pharaoh's horses and chariots and horsemen followed them into the sea. During the last watch of the night, the Lord looked down from the pillar of fire and cloud at the Egyptian army and threw it into confusion. He made the wheels of their chariots come off so that they had difficulty driving. The Egyptians said, let's get away from the Israelites. The Lord is fighting for them against Egypt, right? So the prophetic word of what Moses said is now coming to pass. Now it's an action, right? Now you're walking through the sea, you're demonstrating faith, and now things are moving, right? Then the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand over the sea so that the waters may flow back over the Egyptians and their chariots and horsemen. Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and at daybreak, the sea went back to its place. If you like end times prophecy, go to Zechariah 14, verse 6 on that daybreak, and you'll enjoy doing some reading about that because you can see that this is also a parallel. There's some parallels here with the day of the Lord, right? The Egyptians were fleeing toward it, and the Lord swept them back into the sea. The water flowed back and covered the chariots and horsemen, the entire army of Pharaoh that had followed the Israelites into the sea. Not one of them survived.
Hmm. It's a dreadful thing to fall into the hands of a living God, right? As Hebrews tells us, and it just highlights that if you let your heart get hardened, or if you harden your heart towards the Lord after He's shown Himself to you and given you many opportunities to humble yourself and acknowledge Him, that turning into stone process, you think you're going to get away with it until you don't, right? So that's a really good warning, right? To be in alignment with the Lord and be on the side that makes it through the Red Sea rather than the one that gets consumed by it.
Yeah, and on the other side of the, so, you know, the other side of the Egyptians, here are the Israelites, right, where it's a setup.
Yeah.
Right, you're pushed up against the sea. You don't know why. Here comes Pharaoh's army, and you are terrified. You can't see this, right? And here's the Lord the whole time orchestrating this, where it's a setup, mm-hmm. right? That the Lord now is going to gain glory for himself through Pharaoh and all his army. And the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord when I gain glory mm-hmm. through Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen, right? And it says then that when the Israelites saw the great power the Lord displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord and put their trust in him and in Moses, his servant. Yeah. Right? So just like you saw with Lazarus being raised from the dead, mm-hmm. right, that the people there would believe.
Yeah. Yeah, they go from questioning God and questioning Moses for taking them out of Egypt. Their back's against the wall. It's a setup. They have no way out. They see the Lord's work in their lives, and that's where they were supposed to be, right? Understand that the Lord is who they're supposed to fear, not Egypt. And putting their trust in him and Moses for what's about to come, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the Monday Night Pod for this week. Tyler and Fenske. See you guys next week.